You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. Happy Thursday. Happy end of the regular season. The Pacers beat the Atlanta Hawks last night. We're actually going to talk about that tomorrow, though, because today's a mailbag. Whoop, whoop, who doesn't love those? As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. Mailbags are fun because I get to hear what people are thinking about before whatever happens, free agency, drafts, playoffs, you name it. And this Hawks game, we'll talk about tomorrow because it was, like, pretty inconsequential. They hit the over, and they technically probably won't lose any draft positioning. The Clippers-Jazz game's happening right now. If the Clippers lose, then technically they lost a spot. But it didn't really matter, and no one important played. So it'll be fun to talk about tomorrow because the kids played, but not today. But they won. It was cool. And they hit the over, which is cool. But instead, it's mailbag time. Those are always fun. Topics TBD for you guys, which is always fun. So this one had fewer questions because I didn't beg as much as I usually do. But let's just hop right in. First up, from David Lashbrook at DLashbrook26, Lashbrook with an E, says, question for Tony. If Corey Joseph starts to suck during the playoffs, or excuse me, at any point during the Celtics series, would it be better to keep in Kojo or put Aaron Holiday in? That depends on a few things here. I think Kojo is super important in the Celtics series. Of course, everybody's going to laugh at me because I'm always much, much, much higher on Kojo than everybody else because of his defense. Example A, Trae Young shoots 6 of 18 with Kojo doing a great job on him. I think Kojo's defense on Kyrie Irving or even Jaylen Brown or whoever he may be guarding is super, super, super important. But at the same time, I understand where Holiday clearly looks like the superior player recently with his good offensive play, his jolts. He does the things that you see. You know, you look at the ball, you notice Holiday doing good stuff, whereas Kojo does stuff that you don't notice because you're not looking at him when he does them as much. So to me, Kojo, even when he is shooting 2 for 7, is the better player. That's how highly I think of his defense and the other things he does. You know, he's had a bunch of 6 assist games recently. I think in his slump, his assist averages have been higher than his season average. Like, we've seen him be deferring, you know, in this time. Like, he had some easy shots at the basket and he kicks it out because the shot isn't there. But, you know, that's smart. If you're not making your shot, don't force it up. So, I still think he's too smart of a guy and too important on D to ever bench for Holiday. It would take a lot of suckage. But I say it depends because, like, say it's like a game where no one is hitting anything and it's like 85 to 90 would be the final score. Maybe you go Holiday in that game. But if it's like what you normally expect, by the way, 4 assists a game for Joseph since the start of March. But if it's like a normal game with normal offense, yeah, I just wouldn't do it at all. I think Joseph is too essential to the operation, as HR people like to say, to bench. So that's my take on that. But I imagine that question will be popular here. Next up, we're going to shift over to player movement, everybody's favorite thing. Krieger or Krieger? I don't actually know. I think it's Krieger, but I'm going to get yelled at tomorrow. He wants to know my thoughts on a trade he wrote about. He is in charge of the Pelicans fan-sided site, but he's a Pacers fan. And the Pelicans fan-sided site has been fun for Ethan because he just gets to go wild with Anthony Davis trade rumors, which sounds super fun. And he included one that he got the Pacers in on a 3-teamer with the Celtics, and he wanted my opinions on that. So let me go scroll down and find it. I opened the article before I didn't read it. Okay, so in this trade, the Celtics get Anthony Davis, the Pacers get Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, and the Pelicans get Tatum, Sabonis, and draft picks. So I'm going to cut you off here, Ethan, and say I don't really see the realism of the Pelicans saying they'd rather have Sabonis than Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, because to me, that is a far, far, far more valuable package than Sabonis. Jaylen Brown has potential to be a very, very useful two-way wing. He already has shown offensive flashes. I've seen a lot of Celtics people in my mentions recently telling me he's been better offensively than Tatum for for the last 4 months of the season. And Marcus Smart, whose injury we'll talk about on tomorrow's show as well after the Hawks stuff, is an incredibly elite defensive player, one of the best 10 defenders in the NBA. I think that is a crazy good package to get for just Sabonis straight up for the Pacers. So if the question is, what do I think of it for the Pacers? I absolutely love it. What do I think of it in terms of realism for a real-life trade? I don't get why the Pelicans would reroute those guys to get Sabonis unless they absolutely love him. However, getting Tatum, Sabonis, and draft picks would still be a good haul. He did have an addendum. He had two addendums, but I'm going to skip one of them. in his question that says, could switch around to get Hayward to Indy? Yeah, I've been on that for a while where the Pacers take in his salary as a part of a three-team trade. If the Pelicans don't want to take in some big salary, I'm all for it if there's a way to manage it. But if he plays well in the playoffs, there's no way the Celtics are going to want to give him up. So I'm all for it if it's there. So we do this thing at 8.9 seconds. We have this goofy hashtag because we all love Alize Johnson. It's called Startalize. It looks like Startalize. It's hard to say. When it's Start Alize, it doesn't sound good. But we say hashtag Startalize all the time, and Ethan has requested that I say that on the show, so I did. I said start a leaf before this game against the Hawks, and he did, so look at that. But yeah, Alize played well. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I'm teasing too much of the show tomorrow already. But that was a fun question. Everybody likes playing Mimo. All right, next up, name is Monchi on Twitter, at Julio46Mendez says, I think he meant for me and Adam to answer this, but it's just me today. He said, did you guys ever play organized basketball? What player would you compare your game to? I did. I stopped playing freshman year of high school as my last year playing. who's like a role-playing wing? Does that exist? I was kind of like a 3-4 sized guy, but I was like chubbier because I played football too at that time. So I could set a mean screen, and I was good in the zone defense because no one can shoot when you're 13 years old. But not really good at the whole putting the orange ball into the basket thing. So a role-playing wing, if you can think of a good one like that. I'm trying to think of a good one. Like Mike Dunleavy, maybe, without the shooting, but that's just a terrible player. I guess that makes a lot of sense. I did only play till I was 15. So yeah, let's go Mike Dunleavy without the shooting. That's embarrassing. I'm almost sad I had to answer that. Second part of his question says, I got into basketball because my mom bought me NBA Live 08 and the Pacers were the first team I played with, which is great. What is your basketball origin story? As a fan, Anton Jameson was one of my first ever favorite players. So watching him and Gilbert Arenas on the Wizards was a hoot. And then they had like Larry Hughes and Eaton Thomas, Brendan Haywood. What times those were for the Washington Wizards post-MJ. Those were the fun times that got me into basketball because the Pacers were not well thought of in Indy when I was a kid. However, mostly playing was it for me. It was my favorite sport to play as a kid. Unfortunately, I wasn't very good at it, but that's a fun question. I'm glad you asked. I wish Adam was here to tell you his answer too, but he's way more tied to the city for that. AJ Reese, at AJ Reese 1313, a staple of a mailbag is AJ asking a question, so he has to be here. He says, who could the Pacers realistically pick up this offseason? And if the and does the amount of playoff wins affect that answer? Yes, the amount of playoff wins absolutely affects that answer. However, I think it can only gain, if that makes sense. Like, if they get swept, no one who was already considering the Pacers is going to be out because unless, like, Kemba is considering the Pacers, which I don't think he would be, I doubt that any stars are looking at this team any less. If they get swept, they know what's going on with Vic. They know what's going on with where the roster is at. However, say they somehow manage to stumble their way into the conference finals, which if they make the conference finals, you don't stumble your way in, you make it. If they make the conference finals, then yeah, they stand to gain from that, and they could, you know, then they're attractive to that level of guy. The Denver Nuggets are always the example I go to here, and it's a little different with Paul Millsap because he was getting older, but when he was leaving the Hawks, he chose Denver because, you know, they'd gotten way better over the last 2 years thanks to the emergences of Murray and Jokic, and then they had the good role players and all this stuff. They had the space. It's like, this is the perfect fit for Paul Millsap, who was a four-time All-Star right before that, and he's helped them now become the fourth best record in the NBA and the two seed in the West. Like, that steady growth matters, and I'm sure people are seeing what the Pacers are doing, but also be realistic and know that the Paul Millsap level guy is the target. So if you consider Kemba above that, I'm using Kemba because I know I'm going to get this question a million times going forward. Use that as your barometer. Now, if you do get far enough to lure a Kemba-like guy, you know, I forget which podcast I heard. I think it was Arnovitz and Lowe. It almost always is. They were talking about with Kemba, it's like a lot of teams probably think he's the best guy they can get because he's always played in a small market, so it's not, and he doesn't seem like a guy who would chase a big market. Maybe he's a small market type of dude, and stuff like that. And if that is the case, if he would consider a small market and the Pacers do well, then yeah, that's good. But I don't think them losing is going to lose them anything unless they just get just wrecked in four games, which seems unlikely. Good question, though. Next up, Bryn Stewart at Addy, ADI underscore Bryn with two N's. What should our point guard rotation be next year based on our current roster? Or alternatively, who should stay, DC or Kojo? If you're making me pick between those two guys, as I've stated earlier, my affinity for Kojo knows no bounds, and I will be picking him. But that's not because he's like so much better or anything. In fact, I think Collison might actually be a slightly better player. However, if you're going in a vacuum flat roster, I don't know who the rest of the roster is. I pick Kojo because, one, I love defensive guards. Two, I think it's important that he can play two positions. He's gotten away with playing the two. He's gotten away with not being the ball handler alongside Tyreke Evans. So if you do want to move Vic to the one, or you do end up getting a Conley, Jrue, Kemba guy or something like that, you still have a third guard who you can plug in there and then have Aaron Holiday be your fourth guard. Whereas if you have a really good offensive point guard you get and you have Vic, I think DC's talents, while helpful, are a little duplicative in that instance and are less important. Who should the point guard rotation be? I think they should go for an upgrade at the position, though there's not a ton available. That's why I keep naming those three guys in particular. I'm a big Patrick Beverley guy. If they can get Patrick Beverley, although I understand that he's not a huge upgrade over either guy. So that's a tough one to predict. I should have this open or at least bookmarked by now. But the 2019 free agency class at point guard is not super awesome beyond like the Kyrie Kemba duo, just because like those two. So Hoopsype has a list of all the free agents. So those two are the only point guards in the top 10. Then there's D'Lo, who is going to cost a max, and I don't think he's worth a max, and the Nets would match anyway. Then Eric Bledsoe got extended, so that's not even true anymore. I wish that was updated. Then Derrick Rose, who is a horrible defender and has, no, get me wrong, improved a ton, resurged his offense. Don't think he's a good fit with this team. Then there's Goran Dragic. He could be a good fit, and I have talked about him on this show before. If he opts out in Miami to pursue, like, a three-year deal, a lesser value, he could be a good fit for this team. I actually kind of like that. The foreign guys do well here. Malcolm Brogdon in the next tier as well, although the Bucks have no reason to let him go. And then the drop after Dragic is huge. It's to like Rubio at that point, who is still slightly better than Darren Collison to me, although maybe not in terms of fit with this team. And then you're even farther down at like Rozier, Isaiah Thomas guys, Rondo, Jeff Teague, etc. Guys who don't really make your team that much better and seem like, you know, they're kind of flyer guys for a different kind of team. So I think that it's likely one of those two is back given the free agency class. I don't know which one. And I think they swing to get better at the position. I think that's an important one to get better at too. Having a good ball handler, a good guard on the floor at all times is very important to team success. And thus, I think they should pursue someone better there. Next up from Cab Hill at PacerFan334 says, in what ways should we address the Sabonis situation when the time comes? And if the Pacers did re-sign him, what would they be able? Would they be able to get another player like Beal? Well, the Sabonis situation is very interesting, and I will have much more refined opinions on it in about 2 weeks when the Celtics series is over. Because to me, you have to decide between Sabonis and Turner, whichever one is better for you in the playoffs. Because this team does have high aspirations, maybe not championship aspirations, but with Vic and a really good center and the right guys, you have very high aspirations. And whichever center is better for you in the playoffs is the one you should keep if you get to a situation where you have to keep one. Now, if they work together, that's perfect, because then you're kind of zigging while everybody zags. You have two good players who play well together on the court. You have all sorts of rebounding and shooting and defense skills between Turner and Sabonis. But if one of, you know, if the shooting and defense turns out to be the better playoff guy, you keep Turner. If the screen slamming, diving to the basket, rebounding guy turns out to be better in the playoffs, he keeps a bonus. That's how you handle it to me, is you wait and see what happens in this postseason. Now, say it all works rosy and they work together, and then you have to pay him. I think you have to pay him when he thinks he's worth, because There's no reason to create animosity with him after they extended Turner. You know, they have this. They have an appearance as an organization right now that Turner has their full backing. And I think if it didn't get the full appearance from Sabonis that he has their full backing, then I think he, you know, could get angry. His agent could get angry. You know, I know he loves Vic, and I know he likes it here, and I know he's not a guy who's super concerned about ego or his role. Although, like literally every player in the history of the NBA tells us that like the rule is basically they will chase money and opportunity. But, you know, there are signs that point to Sabonis liking it here enough to stay, and even in his current role, or as the four alongside Turner, whatever. Either way, I think if it works together, you approach him for, you know, a deal around his value. There's no reason to squeeze him in restricted free agency or anything like that, and then see if it plays out. Extending him next summer could not eat up all the space if they don't do anything this summer, or if they sign guys to one-year deals again this summer. So it's hard to say if that would take you out of the running for a guy like Beal, although I'm not sure Beal would ever be available, and he'll make it supermax if he makes All-NBA. But, I think it's just, you know, we're a summer away from the Sabonis stuff being a deal, because they can sign guys and extend him this summer, and that's probably what they're going to try to do, although I imagine he's going to decline an extension this year because he's rapidly improving. Next up, Jack M at VinnyD's98 says, what does your ideal point guard situation look like for us after free agency? Well, see earlier question, but if I can pick my own ideal to name specific players, I think I personally would love it if they were able to trade for Mike Conley. I know Drew's deal is longer and cheaper, but I'm a huge Mike Conley fan, and I think he is a slightly better fit on the current construction of the roster and would be cheaper to acquire in a trade by a substantial amount, thus making him my preferred choice of the trade guys between him and Drew. If they can swing that, take him into space, give up a first, maybe a Leaf-level guy, and then do a sign-and-trade to get the salaries all in there. And then your backup, you keep one of Joseph or DC. You don't even have to do that. You can run with Holiday. I'm okay with that, although I don't love it. Just it's scary. If he doesn't make a big leap, you're trusting a young guy without a lot of experience. But if it's Conley Holiday or Conley Kojo or something like that, I am happy with that being the point guard rotation. Next up, Miller Time Indy, whose name is Daddyus Young. I love it. Who doesn't love some Thad Young? Says, would you rather... Oh, wow, this question has Thad in it. Would you rather keep Bogey and Thad this offseason or go after a star like Kemba? Then would you still say the same thing if money didn't matter? Well, if money didn't matter, yeah, obviously you get the best team you can, right? Maybe I'm interpreting this question incorrectly. If the question is if money doesn't matter, like they're like collectively those two groups will make the same amount, would I prefer Kemba or Bojan or Thad? Kemba or Bojan and Thad? That is a fun question, although I think the answer is Kemba by a fair bit. Bojan is amazing, and Thad does a lot of underrated things for this basketball team. However, I don't know for sure. I have to check this math. Okay, so they can say they renounce every free agent that isn't... Oh, man. Excel did not like me doing whatever I just did. Okay, well, I'm going to get back to this cap stuff and stall by saying other things. I think, if this ever loads, I'll actually just explain what I was going to say. I think that there's a way that they can cut every non-Thad Bojan cap hold and have enough room for Kemba and then re-sign those guys with bird rights going over the cap, but I'm afraid that that won't be right. Why is this configuring? Why is my... I literally just used Excel like an hour ago. This is ridiculous. I can't do that math, though, without being able to click in cells. How I'll just tweet at you tomorrow, I promise. Or tweet at me and I will respond with answers. Anyway, I think it's possible they could keep all three using bird rights to go over the cap. However, if I had to pick one of the groups, money doesn't matter, I guaranteed to get one of them. Yeah, I pick Kemba. I'm going to come back to that at the end of the show. Seth Barrett at SethBarrett4 says, is it better for TJ Leaf to A, play the 5 and get bullied in the paint but have an advantage with the 3-point shot, or B, play the 4 and get beat off the dribble but have an advantage of the post? Assuming in this scenario, Sabonis is traded, so there's a need for a backup center. Very interesting. Leaf did a great job in this game playing the 5 nominally. His offensive rebounding is perhaps his best asset, so without Sabonis, they're going to need somebody to do that. I know there's not an A and B option because it's two different positions, but like I think he can have the skill sets of the 3-point shot and defending guys on the dribble, but he doesn't right now, of course, have either of those. His three has been yucky this year. I think for me with Leaf, I would prefer him at the four. I think he does have enough offensive rebounding and athleticism and stretchability that him getting beat off the dribble, he can match that on the other end at his peak offense, but he's very far away from being a guy that is refined enough to be that guy. You know, he still has like 10th man in a rotation level potential to me. He hasn't jumped ahead. Now, like, there's value in back end of the rotation guys, especially if they really possess certain skills. Like TJ Leaf just had 28 and 10 for a reason. But I am more inclined to say that his natural position, the four, is better for him, given his skill set, given what the team would need, and given kind of how the league is, too. So, one more. Wow, this has been one of the shortest mailbags ever. You guys didn't submit as many questions as normal. I actually appreciate that. Good, it's a playoff one, it looks like. What first-round series, aside from Pacers-Celtics, are you most excited for? And there's a second half about TJ Leaf as well. Is it crazy to think TJ Leaf playing more minutes next year could actually be a good thing? If TJ Leaf is playing more minutes next year, that means that they spent a ton of cap space on a really good player and didn't have the money to sign a backup four. So yes, I think if TJ Leaf is playing the backup four next year, that is a good thing because of what it means for free agency. And if they trust him enough to do it without signing a huge name, then by all means, I believe in the team to make the right decision. Not that I would agree, but I have to trust them more than me. They have more knowledge and resources and all that. The series I am most looking forward to, I'll do one in each conference. I think Nets Sixers is going to be a blast. Pistons Bucks will be boring. I think Giannis is just so far and away the best player in that series. He's going to just roll over the Pistons. We're floundering anyway because Blake's injured. Raptors Magic. Kawhi is just so good. And the Magic, I'm glad they're in the playoffs. It's good for their organization to be back on series there. You know, the Nets, they have high variance because they shoot a bunch of threes. The Sixers, on the other hand, you know, Joel Embiid is kind of banged up. I think that could be more of a battle than people think. I really like a lot of the guys on the Nets roster. I think the Sixers are much better. I think their starting five is super elite and makes them really fun. But I think the Nets could steal a game or two and make us have some storylines there. So that one is my one in the East. Out West, I still don't even think they're set because Clippers Jazz is going on. The only one we know, actually, is Portland Jazz. Looks like it's going to be a thing because the score of currently, at least. Ooh, let's look up scores. Maybe I'll just know now. Clippers Jazz. 121-116 Clippers with 3 minutes to go. So if the Clippers lose tomorrow, I'll be embarrassed. So if that holds, then we'd see Jazz, and then, ooh, wait. Actually, there's two games going on that matter for who's playing. Blazers, Kings. Who's winning that game? Damian Lillard did not play. Blazers win. Ooh. Well, that fourth quarter from Portland, they smoked them. So Blazers could get the 3 seed, and then if the Nuggets beat the Timberwolves, they would get the 2 seed. Wow, this could be a terrible situation for the Rockets right now. The Nuggets did win. Oh, my goodness. What a disaster for the Rockets. So the 2 seed is Denver. They're playing the 7-seeded Spurs. The 3 seed is Portland. They're playing the 6-seeded Thunder. And then the 4 seed is Houston. Oh, that sucks for the Rockets. They have to play the Warriors in the second round. Yikes. Rockets Jazz is now my answer. Now that I know Portland won, that's going to be awesome. Watching Rudy Gobert and James Harden square off in round one. Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. The Clippers are just going to get run over by the Warriors. That sucks. Wow, Rockets Jazz, that's awesome. You guys just got to hear my genuine reactions to series reveals. What a crazy night for the Nuggets. They strategized this out. They intentionally lost to the Blazers so they could have the Blazers get the 3 seed so they could guarantee an easier second round opponent than the Rockets, and they got away with it. That's pretty crazy. Thank you guys for submitting questions. I really appreciate it. It makes me able to talk about stuff. I was hoping there'd be a few more playoff questions, but I know why free agency is so fun to listen to. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and asking questions as you always do. Tomorrow we'll talk Hawks. We'll talk about the kids. We'll talk about the rest. We'll talk about the playoffs. We'll get to it all. So thank you guys so much for tuning in and have a great rest of your Thursday.